and it comes to our text, is the idea that there is so much detail about the difficulties, we would say, to be polite, in Jacob's family life, that it's almost a little exhausting to go through it verse by verse. And so what I want to do tonight is move forward and move on past this whole messy life illustration about his family and really start moving towards an area where we can and make this hit home for us. If you just think about what we've seen thus far in the life of Jacob, he was born a twin, the second twin. Esau is his brother. Rebekah is his mother. Isaac is his father. Rebekah loved Jacob more so than Esau. And Isaac loved Esau more than Jacob, it would seem from the text. Jacob thus far was born into a strifeful situation, a lot of angst going on, a lot of things taking place. He then kind of fast forwards to adulthood and deceives his brother Esau and basically tricking him and bargaining him into selling his birthright, and then also deceives his father, who is now almost completely blind, to bless him instead of the firstborn, Esau. He then is sent away because Esau is going to kill him, and he goes to Laban, an uncle, and finds a relative that he can marry. He starts his own family dynamic, and this morning in some detail we talked about how that family dynamic is very unusual and very not what God designed for a marriage to be like. So having that context, having that understanding, I'm just going to tell you what we're going to be skipping tonight. We're skipping the fact that he had a very difficult relationship, not only with his own family relations, not only when it comes to his marriage, his wives, his children, but also his father-in-law. He was not the most honest man, it would seem, and he was someone that was always trying to get one over on whoever he could. And so for Jacob to run into this guy to teach him how to do it right is a level of irony that we shouldn't miss. Now, there's a lot of detail that we're going to be skipping over when it comes to the amount of wealth, aka goats and sheep, that he was going to take from his father-in-law's property as he's going back home now to be with his real immediate family. And so if we jump through the text to Genesis chapter 31, we find ourselves now when Jacob and his wives and his children have packed up and secretly left, because he was afraid that Laban was going to put a wrench in all of his plan to actually leave that family dynamic where Laban was. One small detail here is one of his wives, one of the daughters of Laban, stole a household god, a household idol. It was very common for large clans or families to have these kind of house gods, these images that they would worship. House gods later became full-blown idols in the sense of Dagon, when it comes to the idea of Baal, of Ashtoreth, and so on. Those are the ones that became more and more popular in the land of Canaan. But at this point in time, it seems to be, it's not quite that large, just kind of a household good luck charm, you might say, for a lack of a better way to put it. And so that one was stolen. Rachel did that. In verse 32, part B, now Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. So now we know who's guilty of doing this. Laban caught up with Jacob in the caravan, trying to figure out if they were stealing things from Laban and where the household gods were. If we jump forward just a little bit into verse 36, they couldn't find the gods. It was hidden in a very good location. If you know the context, you'll know why I say it's a very good location. Verse 36, when Jacob became angry and berated Laban, Jacob said to Laban, "What is my offense? What is my sin that you have hotly pursued me? For you have felt through all my goods. What have you found of all your household goods? See it here before my kinsmen and your kinsmen, that they may decide between us two." So Jacob had enough. He is going to unyoke himself from Laban for good. He's starting his own family unit away from good old dad and father-in-law. In this location, he needs a clean break. Verse 38, these 20 years I have been with you. Now, one thing to keep in mind in case you have forgotten, when Rebecca, the mother of Jacob, sent Jacob away through Isaac's blessing, she said, essentially, let him go and find a wife. In the Hebrew, it's a bit more concrete than that. It literally reads, let him go for a few days and find a wife. And so the idea was she is just going to send him away, find a wife, and he'll come right back home. Right? 20 years go by. Go to Bethel. That's all I heard. Better than my voice, but there we go. It happens. No big deal. And so 20 years go by. That's a lot of maturity, a lot of growth, a lot of change. And when Jacob comes back home, things are going to be very, very different, right? So, in verse 38, part B, your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, and I have not eaten the rams of your flocks. What was torn by wild beasts I did not bring to you. I bore the loss, I took the hit, we would say, of it myself. From my hand you required it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. So he's saying here, I've gone above and beyond what's expected of me. I've lost profit to support your wealth. Verse 40, there I was, by the heat of the day it consumed me, and cold by night, and sleep fled from my eyes. These 20 years I've been in your house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters, and six for your flocks. And you have changed my wages 10 times. This gives you an idea that once that lid of rage came off Jacob, he was happy to just flee by night and go back home, but Laban had to stop him from doing that, and you can see him just venting. Here is what I have been putting up with through you these last 20 years. What have I done to deserve this kind of beratement? Let's keep reading. Verse 42, if the God of my father, the God of Abraham, in the fear of Isaac, had not been on my side, surely now you would have sent me away penniless, empty-handed. God saw my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night. And then Laban answered and said to Jacob, the daughters are my daughters, the children are my children, the flocks are my flocks, all that you see is mine. Jacob, what are you going to do? You had to run from your own family because they were going to murder you for being a trickster. And now here you are with the best trickster we see in the text besides Jacob, and he's learning this lesson. It doesn't feel good to be cheated. But what can I do this day for these my daughters or their children whom they have borne? Come now, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me. It's all right. Let's make a peace treaty. Let's get this over with. Jacob took a stone, set it up as a pillar, and Jacob said to his kinsmen, gather stones. They took stones, made a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Laban called it Jegar Shaduatha, which of course is exactly how you pronounce that, and Jacob called it Galadid. Laban said, this heap is a witness between you and me today, and therefore he named it Galid and Mizpah, for he said, the Lord watch between you and me when we are out of each other's sight. If you oppress my daughters, or if you take wives besides my daughters, although no one is with us, see, God is witness between you and me. Now, I'm not going to go too far into this, but when you look all the way back into the book of Genesis, and Adam and Eve are formed, and they are given to each other by God as husband and wife, there is a perpetual covenant, a perpetual existence of how this whole marriage thing is going to happen. And we kind of made it short, and it rhymed for good reason. Leave and cleave. Those are the two phrases that we find in Scripture. Leaving father and mother, she shall cleave to her husband. The new family begins from the separation from the old family. Again, not going too far with this, but you can see that Laban's having a hard time letting go. 20 years has gone by. He knows Jacob well. He knows he's been blessed because of Jacob. And he's still clinging on to his own daughters, who are no longer his daughters, but now someone else's wife. wives, unfortunately. Let's keep reading. Verse 51. Laban said to Jacob, "See this heap, see the pillar, which I have set between you and me. The heap is a witness, the pillar is a witness, that I will not pass over this heap to you, and you will not pass over this heap and this pillar to me to do harm." So now we know what Laban's really afraid of. He doesn't want Jacob to go away, become a mighty tribe, and come back and take what he knows Laban has. Verse 53. "The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us." And so Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac, and Jacob offered a sacrifice in the hill country and called his kinsmen to eat bread. They ate bread, spent the night in the hill country. Early in the morning, Laban arose, kissed his grandchildren and his daughters, and he blessed them, and Laban departed and returned home. Amen, I might add. 20 years, folks, is a long time to live with your father-in-law and a family as messed up as the one we talked about this morning. One more piece of the tension pie is now eradicated from Jacob's life, but we have a problem. The problem is not ours, it's actually Jacob's, but he knows it's a problem. The problem is, when he goes back home, his brother's going to be there. Now, it's been 20 years, and so one of two things is going to happen. Either Esau has forgiven Jacob for stealing his birthright and stealing his blessing, and they can get on swell, or he's been plotting his revenge for 20 years. So you're leaving one situation with Laban to another unknown situation with Esau. Let's begin reading. Jacob, in Genesis 32, verse 1, Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. Now, this is always fascinating to me. One of my very first questions that I ever asked a preacher from the Church of Christ was about angels. What's the deal with angels? They just fascinated me. I didn't know anything about them. I said, what are they like? Do we see them today? Do they have any kind of significance in Scripture? He goes, well, yeah. They're here to help us. And I go, how? That's a great question. But here, angels meet Jacob. And when Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's camp. And so he called the name of that place Mahanaim. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, in the land of Seir, in the country of Edom. And so now we have a picture of what we should already know. From Jacob, he will be renamed Israel, and you have the nation of Israel coming from this great family. And then you have Esau, who got married, had children, and they become the Edomites. Right? So you have Edom to the south in the mountain regions, and then you have Israel up north in the land of Canaan, eventually. In verse 4, he instructs his messengers, "Thus you shall say to my lord," or sir, Esau, "Thus says your servant, Jacob." Okay, so somewhere in these 20 years of working with Laban, he learned some political savvy. He says, if I want to come to my brother, who I stole his birthright and I stole his blessing, maybe I should be polite. Great lesson, right? "I have sojourned with Laban and stayed there until now. I have oxen, donkey, flocks, male servants, female servants. I have sent to tell my lord, you, Esau, in order that I might find favor in your sight." The messengers return to Jacob, saying, "We came to see your brother Esau, and he's coming to meet you." Uh-oh. Again, one of two things is going to take place. He's been waiting for this day for 20 years, or he's been waiting for this day for 20 years. And there are 400 men with him. Uh-oh. Now, keep in mind here the context. This is not quite yet the nation of Israel, the nation of the Edomites, the nation of the Philistines. These are just warring clans or tribes. So you say 400, what's the big deal about 400? No, back then, 400 is enough to kill your entire seed line. So 400 people coming with Esau, not a great sign. Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. Well, yeah. He's worked 20 years to get where he is. He's got a nice family. He's got a large family. Let's say that. Large family. He's got wealth. He's been blessed thus far. And this could be it. These lights keep flickering on and off. And so if you see me get brighter and lighter, it's just these lamps need to be changed. So I'm going to take care of that later. But don't let it distract you like it distracts me, because we'll all be thrown off. Okay. He divided the people who were with him, all the flocks, the herds, the camels, into two camps, thinking, if Esau comes to one camp and attacks it, then the camp that is left will escape. Well, that's pretty smart. In fact, it's interesting to me how much of Scripture we teach through our military to tacticians, people that are military tacticians. They want to know what's an old, tried and true method to not get wiped out in warfare. Well, not keeping all your people and stuff in one giant location is one great way to not lose all that you have. Verse 9, Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, O Lord who said to me, return to your country and your kindred that I may do you good, I am not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you have shown to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I am two full camps. Well, it seems to me that there's been some growth in the life of Jacob. This is maturity. Sure, fear brought him to this point to open this well up of emotion to God, but it doesn't matter. Jacob is now slowly becoming the man he needs to be for God to make of him a great nation. And that's a great thing, because thus far, it's eluded me to see any kind of maturity or growth in his character. This is it. Verse 11. Please, deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him that he's going to come attack me, the mothers with the children. What he's saying is, God, I don't deserve what you've given me, but please save them from what I've done. That's amazing. But you said, surely I will do good and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. And so he stayed there that night, and from what he had with him, he took a present for his brother Esau. 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milking camels and their calves. You ever had camel's milk, by the way? Me either. Not looking forward to that ever in my life. I can go to my grave never knowing that camels even made milk and be happy about it. Here we go. Let's keep reading. 40 cows, 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys, and 10 male donkeys. These he handed over to his servant, every drove by itself, and said to his servants, pass on ahead of me, and put space between drove and drove. Because I got a plan. If I've got to meet my brother, I'm going to bring him a gift. I'm going to have all these things spaced out. And so I'm going to make presentation after presentation after presentation to my brother. And hopefully he won't murder me. Good plan. It's a great way to do it. He instructed first, verse 17, when Esau, my brother, meets you and asks you, to whom do you belong? Where are you going? And whose are these ahead of you? Then you shall say, they belong to your servant Jacob. They are a present sent to my lord Esau. And moreover, he is behind us. Jacob, you got smart. Laban taught you something. Verse 19. He likewise instructed the second and the third and all who followed the droves. You shall say the same thing to Esau when you find him. And you shall say, moreover, your servant Jacob is behind us. For he thought, maybe I can appease him with the present that goes ahead of me, and afterwards I will see his face, and perhaps he will accept me. Jacob, how far you've come. I'm so proud of you. 20 years ago, you're putting goat's hair on your back and on your hands to trick your blind dad to bless you. And now here you are, treating your brother with love and respect that's due to him like a fellow human being. Good job. So the present passed on ahead of him, and he stayed himself there the night in that camp. Now, can you imagine trying to go to sleep thinking that you hope all these presents will soften the heart of your brother, but you had to flee before because he was going to murder you? You haven't seen him in 20 years, and you're going to see him in the morning. Imagine trying to sleep. Well, something happens that night, and it's something that I love to read because it's just so odd. If you know me, you know I love these oddball situations that we have to try to unpack and uncover and unravel and see what in the world is happening here. So we're going to go on with this next text, and then we'll close out for the night, okay? Verse 22. The same night he arose, he took his two wives, his two female servants, his 11 children, and he crossed the ford of the Jabbok, crossed a river. He took them, sent them across the stream, and everything else that he had. Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. What? What are we talking about here? Now, this is interesting. Let's keep reading. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, this is the man wrestling with Jacob, let me go, for the day is broken. The day's about to start. I gotta let you go now. I can't wrestle all day with you. Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. He said, what is your name? He said, Jacob. He said, your name shall no longer be cheater, the one who grabs the heel, but Prince of God. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Now, the Prince of God became a synonymous phrase with Israel later. Technically, the word here is striving or fighting or wrestling with God, but the idea of him being the Prince is there in the Hebrew. Verse 29, Jacob asked him, please, tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you want to know my name? And there he blessed him. Jacob called the name of the place Peniel. He said, I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. And therefore, to this day, the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip and the sinew on his thigh. What? Was all that. Everything made complete logical sense until that last little bit. This is what I love. Because what we just read is something amazing. Let me tell you why. Jacob took care of all that was his wealth. He separated into different camps. He had his servants, he had his kinsmen that were all there, his hired laborers, and they were doing their thing. He took care of his tribe, his clan, if you will. He then took care of public relations with Esau, the brother who may want to murder him. That was a very, very wise move. And then he took care of his immediate family, 11 kids, two wives, two concubines, for lack of a better word, sent them over to safety. And here he was alone. Now, here's the interesting thing about this. We are not told here in the English in verse 24 that this is an angel of the Lord. But it seems to fit the other occasions that we read in the Old Testament of the so-called angel of the Lord, singular. If that is the case, this is the same angel of the Lord that spoke from the bush that was burning but was not consumed in the book of Exodus, talking to Moses. This is holy ground, he said, right? It wouldn't make a lot of sense for it to be holy ground unless the angel of the Lord was in fact God himself. Because other times you see angels and there's no talk about the idea of it being a holy place because of angels. It's only holy where the Lord is. Now, if we connect all these dots and they all mean the thing that they're supposed to mean, this means that very, very likely Jacob wrestled with the second person of the Godhead all night by himself until the day broke. The reason why we're led to believe that is because of what Jacob says after the angel blesses him. He wouldn't reveal his name, which is a big tip-off. This is not just an angel. And also, he renamed that location in verse 30, "For I have seen God face to face." So what's this all mean? Well, the wrestling concept is a very ancient concept. Obviously, in warfare, hand-to-hand combat, wrestling is an effective way to not die. Right? That seems pretty obvious. But also, it's a metaphor. The idea of wrestling with something, of trying to figure it out. You're trying to wrap your mind around it. It's all figurative metaphors for the idea of better understanding something. And so while he's literally wrestling with God, it would seem, he's also wrestling with God. And he changes from the supplanter, the cheater, the trickster, the one who grabs to heel, to the one who strives for God and therefore becomes the prince of the Lord. What this tells me is God talked to Jacob. He worked with him. And Jacob was so hard-headed, so stubborn, so tenacious to do what was right in his own eyes that God blessed him anyway. He wrestled a blessing out of God, folks. Don't miss that. Again, a very unusual text. A lot of unknown variables here. But all this means for us is we have seen Jacob be transformed from a cheater, a trickster, an immature fool, to now a father, husband, a leader of his tribe and clan, patriarch of the Lord, and now someone who wrestles with God himself. That's a huge character arc. It's a huge amount of growth that we've seen. And now we are just getting started with the good side of Jacob. The lesson for me, the lesson for you, hopefully, is this. When you look back at your life, things that you've done, things that you said, choices that you made, you may think, what a fool I was. I got a couple of those stories in the back of my mind where I said, well, if I could go back and do it again differently, I might do it a little bit differently. But the past is in the past. Jacob made decisions. He made choices. He did things. No doubt he regretted some of those decisions. However, the most important thing about the messy life of Jacob is the fact that he, from a certain point forward, grew. He matured. He wised up. And he even wrestled God himself. That was how tenacious he was in doing what he thought was right. And so when we think about Jacob, you probably know I'm not a huge fan of him as an individual. But when I look at this particular text, the amount of growth that he shows is such an encouragement that if he can take Jacob and make him Israel, the one who strives with God, and he can take Dom Allen and make him something greater than through his grace, through his mercy, through his blessing, because he loves us. If anyone tonight has a need to respond to the invitation, something in your life is not right before God and you want to make correction, if we can help you in any kind of way, pray for you, encourage you, instruct you what you need to do to have salvation, whatever the case may be tonight, if we can help you, please respond by coming forward as we stand and we sing.